This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're in the studios of the Library of Congress, and I'm Grace Cavalieri, presenting Khadija Cisse. And she is here from Britain with an opening poem.
Hi. The first poem I'm going to read is called A Weekend in Manhattan. A weekend in Manhattan changed us forever. I wanted to browse in Tribeca bookshops, drink decaf soy latte with cinnamon. You wanted to window shop in Fifth Avenue for things neither of us could afford. I said, let's visit the African Burial Ground and the Schomburg Center. You pleaded to drive around Central Park in a horse and buggy. I suggested eating at Sylvia's in Harlem. You insisted on eating in Whole Foods on Union Square. Then that call came from home. Your mother had died. And all the disparity from before was gone. I put my arms around you as I saw you cry for the first time. I gave you all the tissues I had. Still not enough. We squeezed hands till we landed back on London tarmac.
That is a beautiful poem.
Thank you.
And what a voice. What a voice. What are you doing in America?
Well, I am doing some research around my topic around print networks of African diaspora magazines and Pan-Africanism, and just doing some teaching on Black British literature at Howard University.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You're doing a course?
I'm just teaching, doing some guest lectures.
Oh, that is wonderful.
Yeah,
and you're here for 1 year.
For nearly a year, yeah.
And you've done this before, I know. You're on a Fulbright.
I'm on a Fulbright.
So your work, your scholarly work and your artistic work kind of go together.
Totally. Yes. I call myself a literary activist, so I just blend everything together. Whatever I enjoy doing, whatever is active, whatever is action-based, whatever supports other people, whatever brings poetry and literature to a wide audience, that's what I do.
You know what? That's the way to be happy.
Yep.
You've just chosen the things you enjoy and you don't do what you don't like.
That's right.
What a wonderful way. And if you keep going that way, the universe will support you because you're what we call in the vibe. In the vibe. And so your name again, say your name for the audience.
My poetry name is Khadija Cisse. I do my academic work under my name of Khadija George. So sometimes I just blend those names together as well.
Khadija, so are you George doctor Cisse. Now?
I'm now a doctor.
Okay.
Yes.
And your dissertation was in the same realm.
That's right.
As your research now at the
That's
library.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You're at the library every day at the Kluge Center.
Exactly.
And what are you doing there? Is that they have research?
It's
papers?
Lovely. Yes, well, we're doing our, everybody does their own research, so we can use whatever books are in the main library.
And so you call them forth and
yes.
They bring them to you?
Yes, which is great, isn't it?
Why don't they bring you 3 meals a day, too? That'd be perfect.
We have to make our own 3 meals a day. And it's just nice being treated special as a researcher. And they really appreciate the work you do. They really appreciate you. And we kind of thought, okay,
you know,
this
the library
is
a treasure house.
It is.
And they make scholars welcome.
Yeah.
And we do make you welcome. But we do want to hear more poem. And give us two together so we'll really know who you are.
I'll do that. I'm going to read, first of all, the most beautiful sound in the world. The most beautiful sound in the world. Water in the dry season, running from a communal tap. Second poem is The Moon Underwater. This poem I wrote for my sister. And the fun thing about it is I decided to read it the first time in public was when she was getting engaged and she was getting married. And I got to the first line and I burst out crying. So I wasn't able to finish it because it was for my sister. So
it
I
is,
was
it's really very moving.
So this is called The Moon Underwater. And it's after The House Was Quiet and The World Was Calm by Wallace Stevens, which is a poem I absolutely love. The moon underwater curves like my sister's smile. As my sister swims underwater, her form is like a smiling moon. She curves, she smiles, she beams. she kisses the moon underwater. Her essence reflects silver like the moon.
And another.
The next one I'm going to read is Family Rituals. This is a totally different tone now because it's from my collection, Urki, which means home. Home in the Nubia language. And it's a migration story of my parents migrating to Britain. And it's also a story which comes out from this in that myself, my brother, and my sister were privately fostered when we were younger. My parents lived in England. We lived with English working class family. So we had this dual kind of family living. So in the stories, some of the stories, I have mum and real mum. Real mum is my real mum, and mum was my foster mum.
Was mum equal to your real mum?
There were two mums.
And they were equally affectionate?
Yes.
Then you're very lucky.
I know. And we used to go around saying that to people. They thought, well, isn't this a bit strange that you were fostered? Isn't that bad? We were like, no.
No.
This is wonderful.
Doubly blessed.
Doubly. And we had the best of English food and the best of African food. Fantastic.
Your mother cooks Sierra Leone?
Yes.
Okay, let's hear poetry.
Here's a poem. This is Family Rituals. Bath ritual. Three little dark-skinned bodies scrubbed down once a week in shared water to remove the scum of ignorance. Ironing ritual. Sheets, shirts, high on starch and fabric conditioner. Towels and hankies folded, but can never get the corners to meet like mum can. Roast rituals. Lamb goes with mint sauce, pork with apple sauce, beef with horseradish sauce, bread goes with dripping, and chips go with custard.
I love the details in your work because they're very straightforward, they're very visual, there's taste, sight, and sound in your work, which is what we want. We say, why do we want a poet to be deaf, dumb, and blind? Let us hear it, let me smell it, let it taste it. I really do like that. What do you think poetry does? Why bother?
For me, poetry tells stories. So I'm working on an anthology at the moment, which is called Black Radical, The Poetry of Black Britain. And it very much tells the story of Black British people in Britain through their poetry. And so not all the poetry is brilliant. It's not meant to be. It's not meant to be this higher form of literature. It's words that you can access, lyrics that you can access, and anybody can relate to. And I believe that when people read this book, they will see the history of Black Britain through another angle and through poetry.
What a contribution. No, everyone has a story.
Absolutely.
Everyone's allowed to tell their story.
Yes.
Some are more elevated than others, but I value very much that idea of a collection. How many anthologies have you put together?
Oh, gosh, I'm not sure. It's because the next one comes along and you know it's going to take a long time. And you just blink it out and you just get on with it.
Well, how do you solicit the poems?
About 10. I do a lot of reading.
And you pick out the poems from journals?
I pick out the poems from journals and from different collections. But also what was important for this one is because we've gone back to year dot. I mean, like the year, like from the, in the 18th century. We had to really look for the work. And the poetry wasn't always in collections. It was in newspapers. It's on broadsheets or on broadsheets and everything.
Yes.
So you have to look of where would they have published at that time.
And is that at the Library of Congress?
It's going to be.
But is that where you find them, though?
What, the poems?
Yeah.
Some of them, yes. In different places.
Like when you're here, what are you looking for? Or are you just writing?
No, some of them, it's for the book. Some of them, you're getting out the books because some of the books are rare. Some of them, there's just not that many copies around. Some of them, I've accessed them in the UK.
It's a big job, isn't it?
It is. It is, and it's ongoing. And every time I keep thinking I've nearly finished, and I tell the publisher I've nearly finished, I haven't. And I have to.
10 anthologies. 10.
Yeah,
well,
I think so. Yeah, it must probably be about 10.
Khadija Cisse, read us 2 poems.
Okay, I will do. I'll read you another. I'm going to read 2 short poems. One of them is called Vicar's Boy. And this is another one set with foster parents. Vicar's Boy. Tongue pink and hanging out, Peter picked up the scissors we used in arts and crafts class. Stuck with chipped bits of pink and blue sugar paper, cow gum and wallpaper paste, and put them to my head. He had only reached the back, so that is where he displayed his artistry. Snip, 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 bald. He rolled my deep, black, crunchy curls around in his hand, as if playing with a kitten. Tired with the pet, he took the glue and stuck them back. Yes.
I see before me a very longish. Now, we're going to hear a long poem now. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because there's a different kind of breath control with short poetry than with long ones.
Yeah.
So I think that'd be fun to hear one of your two pagers.
Okay. I've called this poem, and this will appear in my next collection.
Which is titled what?
It's just called The Modern Pan-Africanist Journey.
Wow.
Yeah. This is called I Can't Listen to John Legend Anymore. I can't listen to John Legend anymore. Not with this divorce between us. Because his words became yours. Needled through my muscles. His vibrating tones that made me tingle became your sneers and screeches. Until my ears exploded. And all I wanted was to sing loud, we're just ordinary people. But couldn't, because we tried so hard not to be. Special, lucky, blessed applied to us, but we just made a mess of it all. I love John Legend, but I don't listen to him anymore. His explosion of sweet sound always made me want to raise my hands, fold him into my chest. But his sound now has become more like a stroke with a slow burn through my head that makes me shake, tremble, pour out my heartache until my ribs bruise, my head blow up into a balloon, as you were so loud, so very loud, that you couldn't hear my song, my shout, my scream, until the only release was to pierce myself, acupuncture-like, to exercise tainted energy. And then I punctured you with, I don't love you anymore. I had to hurt you to release me, and now you can listen to him with someone else. But I won't listen to John Legend anymore. Not with this divorce between us. Because we shared Legend in a way that each syllable of his name, each of his songs, each track on his album pronounced how we could so love and unlove. Yet your disdain of reggae meant you refused to dance with me the night before our wedding on the beach with our friends in the Gambia. I can't listen to Masekela either. And when it comes to Supremo Gil Scott-Heron, it's difficult for me when I hear his pieces of a man. Although now I can listen to the Crown Prince of Lovers Rock and I can play Salif again, Cater, who brought the kind of smile to my face that you said locked you out. Yet you could not know that Hathaway, alone one Christmas, had already done that. 3 years later, with less than what I came to you with, I still fight to keep my songs and my sanity by hitting my playlist over and over and over, except for Legend. He's not on there. Not for now, anyway.
How courageous that poem is, to open yourself out like that publicly and to make it lyrical. That's a chore. The repetition really helps.
Yeah.
Those two lines, I'm not listening to John Legend anymore. And it's really a nice structure to put in the tumult. And it takes the emotion and makes it not less painful, but tolerable because it's beautiful. Someone said, say it clearly and make it beautiful. And you did.
Thank you, Khadija.
Cisse, she actually says she is a Sierra Leone British scholar, activist, and poet. And she has one book, another one coming, edited several poetry anthologies. The next one is Black Radical, the political poetry of Black Britain, co-edited by a gentleman who is no longer with us, Benjamin Zephaniah.
Yes.
And she's judged the Brunel International African Poetry Prize, the Jarlok Prize for Poetry. She's a 25-26 Fulbright Fellow at the Kluge Center, Library of Congress, and Howard University. Is the Fulbright sponsored by both institutions, or are you just, is it always... are you allowed to choose where you want to study? Because Howard and the university, they're perfectly united for what you want to do. Yes. But have you put them together?
Yes, I did. Well, firstly, I'd been lucky and I've been a Kluge Fellow before. And I said to them in 2019, I'll be back. And I did come back because I just knew it was the right kind of space for me to work in and research in. And especially since all of my research is around print and everything anyway. And I knew that some of the things I'd looked at were here that I didn't have time to look at before that I wanted to come to again. And we don't have HSBCUs in the UK. We don't have Black universities. So we just get excited if you've got the opportunity to do that. And I thought, if I've got the opportunity to be at one of the most famous Black HSBCUs in the world, I'm going.
Yeah, that and Howard box. Yeah. Howard is awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
And they've got the Black press history that they're digitalizing. Black press is 199 years old this year. So I just thought, you know, I need to be there.
There's too much information for you to put in one book.
There is. I know.
How are you going to winnow it out?
I'll have some people help me winnow it out, you know. And when you put your editing head on, you know what has to go. You know what has to go even while you're reading things.
And sometimes. This is going to be called The Black Radical?
No, that one is going to be called, I don't have a title for
it's another one.
Yeah, that's going to be a book. That's going to be my
monogram. I hope you have a lot of bookshelves at home.
I do.
Khadija Cisse, speak to us again.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the second longer poem. It's called Song for Dre. Minding my own business in Georgetown, looking through the window of an ice cream parlor, trying to decide on macadamia and toffee swirled, or sorbet. Try the cherry. You bent low enough for your whisper to tickle my ear, which vibrated the thread that sensitized lower lobes. I sensed your breath on my parted scalp before I noticed your waist either side of mine. The glass reflected a smile more gorgeous than ice cream. Are you going to the Cherry Blossom Festival? I shook my head, not a flower lover, unaware of this gift of love and respect. Turned into a national celebration. I'll take you there. I turned to see a set of dimples that sucked me in like a whirlpool. Swinging hands through avenues of pink splashed with green around the tidal basin, your smile piqued me pink deeper than the blossom. We shared mutual appreciation of Japanese poetry, spirituality, me reading you haikus, tankas, you explaining to me your Zen practice, inviting me to join you in your moments of awareness. I found out too late this was your only sense of reality. In 3 days, we planned to meet at the drive-in movie. You kissed me, waved as you walked away. I thought to resurrect later, like a Buddhist monk from meditation. Instead, you disappeared, like the cherry blossom at the end of your season.
Terrific. It's a real Washington poem.
It is.
And a Washington relationship. And we always have a little food in there.
Yeah.
We always have a little food, I think, in each of your poems. Something for us to, something more delicious
yes.
than the words. How do you write poetry? Do you collect imagery and scribble down something on the back of matchboxes and paper napkins and all day long?
Oh, I wish I did.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
I do that with ideas. That's where the activist thing comes in, which is can sometimes not work in your favor when you're trying to do your own work, because you're just so busy jotting down other ideas that it would be great to work with this people and that person everything.
So you must have a number of notebooks.
I do.
One poetry, one history, one...
I have a list. I'm a list person.
Oh, yes.
You know, and sometimes the lists are in three columns because I've got doing so many things.
I love it. Well, how do you begin a poem? I mean, entering
sometimes it's a phrase. It might be an image because I love taking photographs. So it can be a photograph.
Well, the cover of your book is own work.
Yes. Yeah. Because I went to Egypt to finish writing that book. So then I actually started writing other poems for the next book. But sometimes it's just a phrase. It can be a phrase I've heard from a person or that I've seen written somewhere. So like the title of the one about my sister, about the moon over the moon underwater. There's a series of pubs in Britain with that name called Moon Underwater. And so there's about five or six of those pubs. And I thought, what a nice name for a pub.
It was a real poetry title.
Yeah, it was.
It is.
It was.
So you are collecting images, though.
I am, yeah.
That is showing me.
You're right, you're right. Yeah.
Do you have a discipline where you sit down for an hour as a scholar and then as an hour or for a as a poet?
My scholar stuff is ongoing. My poetry stuff, at least now, I belong to a poetry group called Kitchen Alumni. Kitchen Alumni comes from Malaika's Poetry Kitchen. That doesn't happen anymore. There are so many poets who've come out of there published, like Malaika Booker, Roger Robinson, Nick McCoher. But then there's a group who have still stayed and others who've joined post that Malaika's Poetry Kitchen phase. So I was just lucky to be one of those. And so it's the first Sunday morning of every month and where we get online and we write. So sometimes that might be the only time I write, but it gets you to that writing spot and to writing.
That's your discipline.
Yeah.
Do you feel you have to write something to prepare for that moment, or are you writing it with people?
We write with people. Oh, we write at the time, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find that easy to do?
Yes, I think because of the place I've come from in terms of writing creatively has always been community-based. I never really understood that thing of, oh, writing is a solo, solitary thing. It never...
That is the most interesting thing. I have never heard anyone say they could write better in a group than alone.
Yeah, I wouldn't produce that much if I wasn't in a group.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I think the other thing is in the UK we had more writing community kind of centres than we did MFAs in programmes. That's a very new thing for us. Most of the writers came out from writing group, writing centres around the country.
Writing centres.
Yeah.
That's very advanced. Mm. We do have ad hoc little poetry workshops, you know, in each community.
Yeah, yeah.
They're private people's kitchens, you know. But the MFA is, you have many universities in Britain.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't favor MFA programs?
They do now, only because, you know how things change in with the universities and what becomes popular. The first one was at UEA. It was at East Anglia University, and it was started by Malcolm Bradbury. That was the most well-known one, and it went for years. And that was the only one we had for at least two decades. I mean, then we had one, I think it was at Sheffield, might have been next.
Oh, interesting.
We've got more now, but
you can't
it really wasn't.
Stub your toe without finding an MFA program here.
It's like that more now, but we also have our PhDs, like practice-based ones. They call them practice-based, so you can write your book and do an extended essay on some part of the book, and that becomes your practice-based PhD.
I like it. I like it. It got you where you wanted to go anyway. And another poem.
Another poem. I was going to read the one that was about rice, because we were talking about food, weren't we, but also talking about the mums. And I don't know what I've done with that poem now.
Let's see. What's the title?
Here we go. White people can't cook rice.
I agree.
Okay. White people can't cook rice is the title. Mum tried many times to show real mum how to knit, how to crochet, but she was always fingers and thumbs. She shook her head, did Mum, at this fat-fingered African girl. Real Mum tried many times to show Mum how to cook rice, jollof style. But it was always crispy, undercooked, and burnt. She sighed, did real Mum. White people can't cook, can't steam rice.
Mum and real Mum knew each other.
Yes. Yes, they do.
I think that's worth a short story.
You're right.
Because it's unusual, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really wholesome. And I do think you have something new to say there, especially the relationship between Mum and new Mum.
Mm.
That's amazing. And the rice thing.
Yes.
Well.
Yeah, so I put that little clue in the last line, white people can't steam rice because you have to steam it.
Yes, you do have to steam it. Tell us about your visits to, your parents are from Sierra Leone.
That's correct, yep.
And you say you're half Sierra Leone and half British,
mm-hmm.
but you've gone back to visit.
Yes.
And what do you see when you go there? What is it like? It's beautiful, right?
It is. The absolute landscape is so beautiful because there's just so many different, in terms of the weather and in terms of everything, it's so different in different areas.
Is it flat or mountainous?
Both. Can you imagine? It's both.
No.
It's flat, it's mountainous, and there's a lot of water, a lot of natural water, and also it's on the coast. It's fantastic.
Oh,
I mean,
it's
really anywhere you go. So I did work with an artist and curated and wrote for his collection. His name is Arthur Timothy, and he had a fantastic exhibition which just featured so many different aspects of Sierra Leone.
And is there a lot of foliage and natural habitat?
Loads and loads of foliage.
Flora and fauna.
Yep, yep.
Oh, this is so interesting.
And lots of
loved meeting
yeah.
you. Hope to see you again.
Thank you.
And so let us have a final poem.
My final poem is from my collection, and it is called Back in the Day. Singers in the 60s sold thin plastic round plates of black gold, country, gospel, ska, soul, Jim Reeves, Ray Charles, Desmond Dekker, Sam Cooke. Young Afro-Caribbeans shimmied, twisted ankles, swiped soles of feet, spun waists, stepped to ska, and swayed to skeeter. Singing each note clear across the ocean they'd left. And maybe one day their dreams would come true. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want, but you must try, try and try, try and try. You'll succeed at last. That was from Jimmy Cliff.
It certainly was. And you are a music scholar. You certainly are. Khadija Cisse. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress in the studios of the library. The program is produced by Forestwood Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MAT Studios. We wish to thank the library for making the program possible. Funding is provided by Young Ki Kim Renault, Avide Shashani, Natalie Canavore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Our engineer is Sandy Kinlock. I'm Grace Cavalieri.